So I'm presenting about FOSS and education. This is one of my favorite quotes about education. I had to Google and figure out who it was from because I've just had it around for a long time, which is education is what is left when you've forgotten all the facts. So after you've been through all the tests and you don't really remember all the little bits and pieces, that's what's left when we think about education. There we go. So I was homeschooled. I was actually, well, I like to tell people I'm a third grade dropout. That's the fun way to say it. I went through third grade, and I was actually homeschooled for the first half of kindergarten when I was a really little kid. And I remember that being a lot more fun than school. And I convinced my mom to pull me out of school and go back to homeschooling. And from fourth grade until I took the ACT, which is a college exam in the U.S., when I was 18, I never took any more tests. And it was great. That's what I actually did graduate from a high school, though, because in the U.S. there's something called Con Laude School, which is an umbrella school. So for homeschoolers that want a standard transcript and a standard high school diploma for just purposes of ease of applying to colleges and whatnot, you can enroll in Con Laude School, and they actually have an international school. They also have a base in Germany, actually, as well. And they also have a campus school. It's in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is about a 4.5-hour drive from my house. So I've been there a few times over the years. And I graduated in 2002. I actually graduated a year early. I didn't actually know this until about 6 months before I graduated, because we had these things called credit report forms where you filled out what classes you were taking and how many hours you had done for this or that. And I had failed to send in mine for the second year till the middle of the third year. So I didn't really realize how much I had done for that second year and up till then. And I realized when I was going to send it in that I had gotten something like 12 credit hours the last year, and I only needed like 6 or 8 or something for that year. And so I remember my dad came home from work and I was like, "So Dad, guess what? What? I think I'm graduating." It was kind of a fun, random, "I'm graduating this year actually, so I guess I'm gonna have to do something else." Because at that point I was looking into applying for a foreign exchange student program or a Knowles trip, something fun for my senior year. But in any case, I graduated, and because I graduated a year early, I didn't have time to apply to the school that I actually wanted to go to, which was in Alaska. At that point, my plan was to be a marine biologist. I had forgotten how much I hated school. I quickly remembered when I went to a little Kent State in Tuscarawas, which is like their satellite school near me. And I went there for one semester and remembered how much I hated school and sitting and listening to people talk and writing things down. So I then transferred down to Hocking College, which is also in Ohio. And at Hocking, I majored. I have two associates from them. They're not really super useful at this point. They're in backcountry horsemanship and natural resource management. So about as far away from computer science as you can get. It was a fun school. I had a blast. I met my husband there. And yeah, since then I spent a year in Spain in 2005 because I wanted to learn Spanish. After we went to Peru, and I realized that I should really learn Spanish if I'm going to travel that way and at least learn one more useful language. And so I spent a year there and learned Spanish and came home and whatnot. So something that's interesting for most people to realize is that I live in the middle of nowhere, and I say that jokingly, and most people don't really believe me, but if you see at the end here, at the very end of that white line, there's a little white spot, and that's actually the roof of the cabin that my dad lives in. We live in the other sort of creamy colored spot there. This is a wider, this is about like a mile or 500, yeah. So about a half mile probably almost. So a larger view, the Carrollton up there, that's the county seat. The other little mark with a name up here, that's Delaware. That's where my son went to school for a year and a half, I guess. He did a year of public preschool, and he liked that. He loved that. And then he did about a month of kindergarten, maybe two, and he started complaining he didn't want to go. And I couldn't blame him. I hate school, like I said. I remember that whenever I go back. So I pulled him out, and now we're homeschooling. So in the U.S., homeschooling accounts for about 3% of the population of kids as of 2007. In 1972 was when it started to become legal. I don't know when it really became completely legal in the US where people weren't worried anymore. Because when I was homeschooling originally in the 80s and the early 90s, it was still sort of an iffy proposition, which is why my family joined Clonlara originally, because they were a way to be sort of safe and not worry about the law that if you got in trouble, Clonlara would represent you. So why we homeschool? Is because, well, A, Andrews doesn't want to go to school. And B is because when in school, kids, if you think of the world and what there is to learn about it as a pie chart, which is the blue, in school, kids, they get this little section, right? They get this section of the world of exposure to different things and different ideas at school, but they miss out on a whole bunch more because the world is not just school, as we all know who have gone away and moved on from school. And the what a lot of people have a problem with homeschooling in the US is because so many people homeschool for religious reasons, which isn't me. But the religious homeschoolers, because they want to expose their kids to this tiny sliver of the world, of a little bit of education and of their very small view of the world, which I don't agree with, and hopefully most people don't agree with, but there's lots of them in the US that do. But I homeschool because I want to expose my kids to this, which is everything that there is. So mostly what we do as homeschoolers is we read books and we play games and we acknowledge that we're always learning. You're learning something right now, I'm learning something right now. We're always learning something. Learning never starts and it never stops until you die from the moment you're born. So unschooling is what we're really doing. I've been saying I'm homeschooling. That's technically true, that's what I tell the government. But actually what I'm doing is called unschooling. And when I grew up, I was an unschooler. I didn't actually know that till I got to about high school, college, and realized that we were actually unschooling. And this is a quote from John Holt, who is sort of the father of homeschooling. He wrote a whole bunch of books in the late 70s was when he started writing, through the 80s, about education and kids and how kids learn. And it's, you know, to trust children is the hardest thing that we can possibly do, because most of us grew up not being told that we couldn't be trusted to learn. That in order to learn, you had to go to school and sit down and read a book and do worksheets and take tests. So these are just a couple of other quotes from John Holt. It's true. That's what, you know, if you think about it, we're always learning in everything we do. And my biggest example, my easiest example for most people is Legos, because probably all of us have played with Legos, right? Has anyone in here not played with Legos? Let's do that. You've never played with Legos? No?
Because in Spain, there's
okay, so you played with the Spanish version of Legos. Okay, so... Yeah. So these are my boys. The little one facing us is Keegan. He'll be 4 on Wednesday. And the other one is Andros. He's the one who's homeschooling now. And this is mostly my collection of Legos. There's some that they have gotten for birthdays and Christmas in the last couple years. This is a very common picture in our room. When you walk into our house, this happens at least once a day that they ask for the Legos to be pulled out. And usually they're out all day. Not always. Sometimes they get put away because, you know, I need to vacuum the floor or something. Or I just want to do something else besides step on Legos or step around Legos. Because, as we all know, stepping on Legos is slightly painful. I actually had a cut in my foot a few months ago from a Lego that somehow I stepped on just perfectly wrong. And it was actually bleeding. It was really painful. But so Legos, when you think about it, what do you learn when you're building with Legos, when you're playing with Legos? What are you learning? You're learning how to count, how to add, how to subtract, how to build things, you're learning all about math, all about science and engineering, right? You're learning about all kinds of things, about art, how to design, how to make things look good, how to, you know, versus building something with a jumble of colors versus all the same color. My son's still in the stage where he's just, I need this piece and I don't care what color it is. I'm sure that will change eventually, but right now he doesn't care. He just wants to build things. So that's just my example to get you thinking of the of how to think about unschooling. So in computers and unschooling, this is my boy's computer. Just to the right of it is their bunk beds. There's a Leapster sitting there charging, which is also a constant battle. But what we use is we use this old desktop. This was my high school graduation present. It was a great PC back in the day. It still works. It still works fine. But it actually runs XFCE, or actually Xubuntu to be exact, because it just won't quite run GNOME. I actually haven't tried, but I'm pretty confident 512 megs of RAM on an old P4 is probably not sufficient. They also use a lot of Leapsters. They play with those mostly in the car. And there's all kinds of great games that teach them different things. And they also play on my tablet. I have a PengPad, which was a Kickstarter, I think, over Christmas. So it's a tablet that's a free tablet. It runs, it has a version of Android on it, but I can also stick in a little SD card, and it'll boot into Linux. I think it's LXFCE that's on it. They also play with, obviously, our Android smartphones, their computer, and my laptop occasionally when I let them play with it, which is unusual because they're 4 and 6, and I don't know if you have little kids, but they're slightly on the destructive side. So as far as applications that we use and that they have access to every day, there's a lot more than this. Mostly they love to play games, obviously, as all kids do. They play Tux Math and Tux Typing all the time. Those are games to them. They also play Math War. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's another application. They're fairly basic. They start out adding and subtracting. I do believe they go into multiplication and division. My guys haven't gotten anywhere near there yet, but I'm sure they will eventually. There's also GCompre, which is a GNOME project. And GCompre has a ton of stuff in it. It's a suite of programs. So there's all sorts of games. There's all sorts of writing programs. There's reading, learning the ABCs, how to count, how to do all sorts of things. Some of our Summer of Code students last year wrote programs that added in stuff about space and physics and stuff, which was really cool and really fun to have. They also play, obviously, games on our tablets and things. This is Swords and Soldiers. Has anyone in here played Swords and Soldiers? It was in a Humble Bundle, which is how I have it, because I've been buying most of the Humble Bundle games or bundles for a long time. This is one of my boys' favorite games. This is a great example of how kids are just sponges and learn things. We were at a museum. They had played this a few times. And we were at a museum in Ohio, and it had big displays about different cultures. And one of them was the Chinese. And it was like, oh, look, I see. And the Chinese invented gunpowder. And my son Andrew just went, oh, I knew that. And I went, where'd you learn that? Where did we possibly go over that? I'm trying to think. And he went, Swords and Soldiers. And I'm like, what? In Swords and Soldiers, there's the Vikings, which you see right now. And there's also Chinese and Aztecs that you can play as. And the Chinese have gunpowder. They have guns because they invented gunpowder. And that's how my son learned that Chinese invented gunpowder, which just kind of made me laugh. And it still makes me laugh to think about it, that just random things that they pick up everywhere, constantly. As far as other ways that we have for kids to learn about computers, is there's this thing called Scratch, and their motto is Imagine, Program, Share. It's done by MIT. My boys haven't messed with it yet. It's mostly online, and they haven't quite got to that point. They're not quite reading yet. But I'm hoping to introduce this fall, and when I get back, and getting some more different things installed. There's also Alice. I don't know much about Alice. I was trying to look it up in the last couple of days. Hopefully, I'd like to introduce them both. But the problem that we have with kids and computers is that in school or even at home, most people have what? They have Windows or they have Mac. And so that's what kids are being taught right now, is they're learning about Windows. They're learning about Mac and how to run them. They're not learning anything about free software. They're not learning anything about how to run it or its ideals and what's behind it. And as a result, we don't have much for them, right? Until they get to college, really. There's some other things here and there, but until we get to college, most kids aren't really exposed in any way, shape, or form. And even when you get to college, you're not generally exposed to free software. And by that time, you've lost them because they've already become set in their ways into what they use and what they know. And if we want to add more people to FOSS generally, to GNOME, we need to figure out some way to reach out long before they get to college. Some way to reach out and grab them and something to get them thinking. There's also Sugar, of course, which is an outshoot of the one laptop per child. That's who it was originally developed for. And Sugar's great, but the problem is Sugar's a fairly basic thing, and it's kind of hard to get. You have to know how to at least install Linux, or at least be willing to try and burn something to a USB key, which is not something most people know how to do for a first way into FOSS. I love Sugar. I haven't got it on my boy's computer yet. At some point, I'll probably give that a try. You know, that's what the other problem with the One Laptop per Child program is. They have these awesome things, like the XO tablet that's coming out shortly. And I would love to have a couple of these for my boys, but I have no way to get them because they only are sold by the 100. I looked up that the minimum order is 100 because they're really only selling them to schools. And they're not really trying to get sell them to schools even in the U.S. That's what I've played around with the idea of trying to get 100 homeschoolers or 100 friends that would want to buy one of these for their kids to try and put together a group buy. But I haven't managed to figure out exactly how to do that. I don't know quite that many people with young kids yet, at least, that have the money to spend $100, $200 on a toy, essentially, for their kids. I would love to do it, because I would love to have one of these. I'd love to have two of them, actually, because I would need one for each, which is why we have two Leapsters, because one is, yes? Well, yeah, and I would love one, too, but at least two, one for each of them at a bare minimum. But there needs to be some way for people to get FOSS easily. And if even these were available for sale, it would be a lot easier to say, oh no, you can go buy one, but you can't. This is just more about what I've been saying. You know, the Sugar and the OpenLPC, they do great things. They have, you know, several million computers now in mostly third world countries where kids are using these and learning how to develop and learning how to use computers and learning how to read, for that matter, on them. You know, some of these, I know they've done experiments, yes? Yeah, that might be. Yeah, but even, you know, that's what it's just, it's a great project and it's a great idea, but there needs to be an easier way to get a hold of it. When kids get to high school, there is Google Coden, which I really wish existed, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was in high school, because I totally would have done that. But Google Coden is great, but it has the same limiting factor as Summer of Code, which is that it's only code, and it's only for high school students. And it's not super well advertised, so lots and lots and lots of people don't know it exists. And it needs to be more well advertised, and we need something very similar, but that is not purely code. And that is a different way to get into free software for kids and for people generally, for that matter. Different ways for them to become involved. Yeah?
Would it be possible to just start Sugar from unboxes?
Possibly. That's an idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. I might have to give that a try. So what do we need? Is we need some way to bring kids in, something that's fun, that they want to play anyways. This is one of my boys' favorite games on their computer. This is SuperTux. I assume probably some of you have played SuperTux once or twice. I have. It's essentially Mario. So why? It is. Don't lie. It's a platformer. It's a basic...
He's not even a
penguin. He's a penguin. It's true. He's a penguin. But I love SuperTux. My boys love SuperTux. But the question is, and this much follows Matt's talk, Endless Mobile, is why isn't SuperTux easy to change? Why don't we make it a way for kids to make new levels, to make their own levels? That maybe you have to beat the game first. But once you beat it, now you can go in and you can easily design your own levels. Why can't you make different to make the physics of the game a little bit different? Even if it's just to change it so that instead of running on the bottom, maybe you run on the top of the screen. Maybe you float. Maybe you can fly now. And different design different things. Why in free software can't we make it easy to use and easy to play and go from there? And programs that focus on freedom, that focus on promoting and explaining freedom. Freedom as in it's yours, as in we've given you SuperTux, and now it's yours, and now you can play with it, and you can design new levels, and you can give them. Is there a level editor for SuperTux? Is there? Yeah. That's awesome.
You can design new levels. I mean, you cannot change the dynamics of it.
Right.
But you can create new levels.
Right. So we should be able to change the dynamics of it. Why can't we? I mean, it's free, right? Can't we figure out some way to do this? And I'm not a good enough programmer that I can say that I can do this. And aside from that, you know, in schools around the world, there are some countries that are trying to move towards free software. Some highlights are Brazil, where there's 35 million people in, I guess, 500,000 schools using free software, which is amazing and awesome, and I'm so jealous. In Spain, the Extremadura is moving to open source, and they've installed Debian on 40,000 desktops, which is pretty awesome. And Thailand, just a few days ago, ordered 1.2 million Android tablets to give out to their students, which is, I know, it's not really free, but it's better than them ordering OS X. Come on. It's better than them ordering Windows tablets. I would much prefer to see people use Android rather than Windows or OS X, because at least it's something different, and it's a third option that is becoming slowly available. And aside from that, there for schools, there are some FOSS management applications, which when I looked this up and found out all this information, I can't understand why schools don't use these more, other than that they're somewhat limited. But there's all sorts of different ways that we can be promoting ourselves to schools, because if they have some way to use it as their management software and realize that this works, then maybe they're going to be more likely to use it for their desktops. Because right now in the US, and I'm sure it's true around the world, there are millions of people with XP on their systems that is going to be completely obsolete in 2014. And at that point, what happens? What happens to all those people? What happens to all those schools and those libraries, some of which exist in my town, that have these old systems that now they're going to be forced to upgrade to something else? And can we promote ourselves to them to try and get them to move, to say you don't have to buy new hardware? Because so many places of right now, of course, are so strapped for cash that they have no money for new computers or for new licenses or anything else. And that's pretty much all I have, if there's any questions. Otherwise, I'm done. Yes?
You answered this already, and I might have missed it, but I was just wondering how you expose your kids to other kids.
By traveling. That's what we go on lots of field trips, more or less constantly. So the day after I get back, into Ohio at something like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and the next morning I am getting up at probably 8-ish and packing a lunch. And around 9, we'll be leaving and going to Nature Rangers, which is a program. And that happens every other week through the summer. But then throughout the school year, we go on lots of field trips to museums, to science centers. It's amazing how much stuff is going on for kids that you don't know about until you start looking. I mean, in my area, when my kid was in school, I didn't even look because I didn't care, right?
Yeah.
But once he said he didn't want to go to school, I spent the next 2 or 3 months, because that was in October-ish, he started complaining he didn't want to go, and I pulled him out after Christmas. So for the next 2 or 3 months, I spent online looking up all different things. And let's see, I can show you my calendar of stuff. Wow, that's weird. Where is it at? Tatra. Open up evolution of stuff that we do, which and everything that's on this calendar we don't go to. We couldn't if we wanted to. So, all of the Here, let me take off mine and Kevin's. So all of that is all the stuff that there is to do within an hour or so's drive of where I live, which is the middle of nowhere, as you all saw earlier. So we don't do all of this because, frankly, you can't. A lot of it conflicts. But this is constantly, this is August. And I have this, and this is just what's planned right now as of a few weeks ago. I'm constantly adding new stuff to this. This is, you know, September, and it just goes on and on. We're joining a co-op as of, I think the first meet and greet is in August 28th, and then every, more or less every other week, we'll be up in Akron, which is like an hour and a half away, for a inclusive co-op with, I think there's 90 kids in the co-op.
Then I see Corsair sometimes. That for your kids or for you?
Yeah.
Both. Corsair.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff to do. Yeah?
Do you have any thoughts on higher education? I mean, university level degrees and all that.
I think in order to get kids involved at the university level, we need to start them when they're yet little, when they're young. And I mean, that's what Summer of Code is a great way to push it that way. But the question, of course, is how do we get the people who are into design and other things to join us and help us design better GNOME 3, you know? And I think that's what maybe the outreach program for women does some of that. And maybe we need a larger outreach program for just general people to bring them all in to say that you can come and work on free software in ways outside of code, outside of Summer of Code. There are other ways to get involved and to have to give contributions and give back and start using.
Okay. And just as a note, nothing related to this, you might be interested in the field of end user development.
Yeah.
Which is actually about empowering users to hack their software, hack their applications, change it, and change its behavior. Abstracting the programming layer that it's often a barrier, so you might be interested in that.
Yes, absolutely. Different ways to do that. Anything else?
Okay. Yeah. Do you have create a full education list, application list for education? Because in Asia, in Taiwan, we have a special Linux we call the EasyGo Linux. We create a KDE and GNOME application for education use, and we also use the PHET. For the Scratch, we also in the list. I think that is very important. You must have a list to have a school and for the children, for their parents to know what FOSS application we can use. So would you did you do that for education list or some resource? Getting together.
If you're asking, there's a resource around where I live. The answer is no. At least not that I'm aware of. If there was, I would love to hear about it. I haven't so far. It very well may exist at some university that I just haven't looked into their stuff that's available deep enough yet. But I certainly haven't heard about it. And I know lots of people who have kids who want to learn how to program, and they don't know how to help them start. And what's out there is just it's not very good. I mean, like I say, there's Scratch, and there's Alice, and there's Code Academy, and different things. But none of those, and those all, they might teach programming, but they don't focus on the freedom part, which is the problem, in my opinion, that we need to have something, an educational program for kids that focuses on teaching them in a way that's fun, but that also is teaching them about the principles of free software and why that's important. Why is it important that it's free? Not just how to do it, but why is it important that you're releasing your source code and that you're contributing in an open, you're putting it on GitHub and it's open and it's free.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Ryan. how do you propose, or how do you think that we, as a community, can reach large numbers of young people outside of just the ones that we interact with in our communities or in our families? What are your ideas about that? Have you thought about that? Or
That's kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that I think we need to invent Super Tux and invent a way to change it and release it and market it and use what we have in free software to market it and show it to kids and make it become somehow the cool new app that kids then download because they want to download it. And it needs to run on Linux, obviously, but it also needs to run on Android and probably on OS X so that kids there can download it and look at it and play with it. Because let's be honest, most kids are not running GNOME as much as we might want them to.
That was actually exactly my question.
Anything else? Fran again.
Did you think about going to schools, maybe?
I would love to go to schools, but I don't know quite how to approach them. They're hard to approach, at least where I'm at. I've tried to approach them for other various things. And how do you go in and tell them, I want to expose your kids to this? And a lot of them are just, at least where I live, are very resistant to anyone outside of themselves because they're all about their funding and what they have already.
So my university did this.
Yeah.
And it basically was like one of the professors had a sister who was a teacher at a school.
Right. So he had an in there of some way to get in already. But if you don't have that in, if you're me and I don't really know any teachers in the schools, how do I find that person that will give me access and let me come in and help their kids learn? Yeah.
For one thing, in my local community, I still have like good connections with my high school and elementary school. So yeah. Most people who probably still know people who like went to their high school or elementary school,
yeah,
who are teaching there.
Yeah. I mean my brother, I know lots of people around, but I don't know anyone who actually works for the schools in that capacity.
Your old
teachers? Yeah, I didn't go to school, so I don't have old teachers. I have a huge network of friends, but mostly all of them have scattered. They're all over. There's in California, one just got to Sweden. They're just everywhere.
This is more of a comment than a question, really, but in my high school, learning computers was learning Microsoft Office,
right,
and proprietary programs, so
right.
I'm really interested in finding a way to stop that.
Right. No, that's what I when I was in college, I had to take Microsoft Office. My husband actually had to take it twice because they wouldn't accept that he took Microsoft Office 2003 when he went back to school 4 years later, and it was now 2007, so it was a different class, and he had to take it again, which just drove me crazy and him crazy.
Also, more of a comment than a question. What you mentioned with changing the physics of the game reminded me of the talk by Brett Victor. Maybe some of you know it, like where you can edit the code, like you can directly edit the code and see how it influences the game. So
right.
How it influences the trajectory of the jump, for example.
Right.
So I think that would be great, like not only for kids, like for everyone, but especially for kids. So you can easily see like. You slide the value for, I don't know, gravity, and you
right.
see how the jump trajectory changes.
That would be perfect. That would be, something very simple that they can slide this, and you're changing it from value 10 to 20, and what does that change?
So you might have mentioned this already because I came in late, but Matt Dalio in his keynote mentioned having a game that the people could actually edit and
right.
learn from. Was this like connected to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, that was all. Yeah, that's what the one other thing that Matt said that I think is absolutely genius, and it comes back to where I live, which is in the middle of nowhere. I don't have high-speed internet, so his idea of having a way to update your system with a remote key is just genius. I do that all the time, in that I take my laptop to the library, but it's true, my kid's laptop gets updated infrequently at best because it means running a cable to it. And then telling them they're not allowed to play with it for like a day while it downloads, because I download it 10 or 20 kilobytes a second. On a bad day, it drops to 5.
Did you ever play Quake?
Quake, yes. I remember Quake, yes.
Do you know like what happens if you press this button and you put it on the keyboard?
It's... Yes.
Did you ever play around with that?
Yes, but it's been years and years and years. But yes. That sort of stuff to change things.
Probably more user-friendly than that.
Yes. And if that's it, then that's...